Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Trish, I couldn't give you your Christmas present. No. We couldn't have our Christmas drinks, which would have ended up with us rolling around silly. But I did get you something from the charity shop, which made me laugh.
Yes.
I haven't wrapped it up, so I can show it to you. Look,
you're going to show it
to
me.
It's a box set.
Oh, it's Morecambe and Wise.
It's every episode. Morecambe and Wise.
Oh, is it DVDs or videos?
DVDs, mate.
Oh, DVDs. I might actually be able to use those. We're not going back that far. That's brilliant. That's brilliant.
It's good, isn't it? So we could have a big session as the menopause or Morecambe and Wise, watching Morecambe and Wise.
I was going to buy you a stapler because I know.
Well, I do need one. The horrible children. Mine doesn't work at all.
You never have a stapler and you keep messing up your script, don't you? But when we meet again, Lorraine, I will have something lovely for you.
That's exciting, isn't it? An ancient box set and a stapler. Maybe we'll review that. Now, shall we talk about something else that's happened this week in the news? Mm-hmm. The return of Sex and the City. How do you feel about that? I've got a different view from what looks like everyone on Twitter.
Oh, because everyone's so excited about
yes.
it.
Yes.
I'm interested because I really like Cynthia Nixon and I think so much has happened to her in the real world. But I don't know. I didn't do that movie too because everyone said it's a disaster. Don't watch it.
It's terrible.
Didn't, thank God. But what's your view then?
Well, my view is the old series, actually, much as we loved it at the time and I was a fan at the time, it doesn't hold up.
It doesn't hold up in this era.
It isn't. It's all about
good for women.
Desperate search for a man. Mm. My view is a lot of the stuff is around, wouldn't it be great to see women in their 50s on telly? This will be brilliant and glamorous, etc. Can't we write a new one? I mean, it's not like there aren't a million brilliant female script writers out there. I May Destroy You, I Hate Susie, Fleabag, who could absolutely write the best 50s. Why can we only allow it if it comes back from the olden times to be done now? It made me quite cross that thought it's because why we can't write it is because it won't be commissioned, because most of the power still sits in the male place on television commissioning. I'm going off on one now, look.
Jeez.
And it won't be commissioned because people will say no one wants to watch anything about women in their 50s, which we have proven wrong ourselves. Trish, have we not?
Well, they're certainly listening to women in their 50s, and I think it's time to show them on the screens, big and small.
Write my own sitcom. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to Postcards from Midlife. I'm Lorraine Candy.
I'm Trish Halpin, and we're on a mission to help you make the most of your magnificent midlife. We'll be tackling everything from mind and body wellness to HRT and your sex drive. Lorraine and I are here to help you have a stylish second act and answer all your midlife questions on fashion, beauty, careers, relationships, family, and as always, the challenges and joys of parenting teens. In today's episode, we're going to be talking to a woman who we think of as a proper grown-up. I think because she is so impressive at what she does, she looks as fit in midlife as she did when she began her career in broadcasting way back in 1992. She is always super smart and glossy, and she takes no prisoners when it comes to challenging even the most high-profile guests in her interviews. Yes, it's TV presenter Gabby Logan.
Oh, I'm looking forward to this. Well, yes, I can ask tough questions, but my biceps are not quite as toned and my hair isn't quite as fabulous and glossy as Gabby's. Oh, well, never mind. So talking of tough questions, we are also going to be asking how you deal with feelings of fear, stress, anxiety and overwhelm that many of us are experiencing right now. And later on in the show, How to Win at Midlife is about sharing what we found out about buying perfect lingerie. Do you like that word, lingerie, Trish?
I'm not sure I do. I'm more of an undies kind of a girl.
So get ready to sling out your old grey bras and uncomfy knickers. It's time to give your underwear drawer a makeover.
Yes, get rid of those ghastly thongs.
Have you worn a thong, Trish?
No, well, once and never again. Can't do it. Chafing.
That's an image for the listeners, Trish, chafing.
Now, Now, Lorraine, we have to admit we've been finding these grey lockdown homeschooling January weeks really quite tough. And we've both been hearing so many stories from friends and other women we know about just how overwhelming everything is right now. We're hearing about people having panic attacks, feelings of despair and worry about the future. And I think as midlife women, feeling overwhelmed, feeling like you're unraveling, it's kind of familiar to many of us, because when you go through the menopause, perimenopause, that's something that can happen. But I don't know, I somehow think this is all on another level, don't you?
I think this lockdown, the 10 weeks last one, with the very first one, I think this one is worse, much worse. Mm. I think a lot of people are really struggling on a day-to-day basis. Now, I know we're not all intensive care nurses and we're not all working on the front line of the COVID crisis, but it does feel very intense at the moment. It feels like a relentless slog. And I know a lot of people are completely overwhelmed. I've had lots of friends and I've been looking at social media, a lot of people, women particularly, talking about being horrendously overwhelmed by their feelings and submerged in stress so that it feels like you're swimming through this. These are very, very intense feelings. So it's not healthy anxiety. It's a kind of constant, intense feeling. I think there are some things that you can do about it. So I've been reading about Buddhism, Trish.
Okay. Yes. I never thought I would hear you say those words.
I am of forgettable.
It's appealing to you, is it?
Well, yeah, it's appealing to me because it's a slightly practical thing that I think that we always try and avoid these terrible feelings, particularly when we get near the point of panic attacks. But actually, perhaps we have to sit with these feelings and observe them, because we know they're going to go on. We know that all of the world is in permanent, constant change at the moment. And that's what we're dealing with, this massive uncertainty and constant change. So are these feelings that we're having good or bad, or are they just feelings? I mean, there is a Buddhist saying, it just is. And at the moment, it just is. But there is something I read about, which is from Buddhism, and it's R-A-I-N, something called RAIN. So recognize your feeling. Say, this is what I'm feeling, but it's not who I am or what I am. Accept that feeling. So allow yourself to feel that feeling and then investigate that feeling. Why? What are the things that are causing this feeling? Very specifically, factually, what are the things? And then the N is for to not identify them. So you can feel it, but you aren't that emotion. You're aware you're having that emotion. It doesn't belong to you, that emotion. You don't have to be the feeling. You can just observe the feeling.
It doesn't have to define you. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So it makes it less intense. I think learning to breathe properly is very helpful probably during these times. There's a Yoga with Adrienne on YouTube who I love. She's doing a breathing course, which I found really helpful. It feels like a kind of storm, doesn't it, coming at you. Now, the thing that really changed it for me, because I had a really terrible moment last week, because we're homeschooling all three children at home. They can't see anyone. They can't go anywhere. It's a very tense, every room you go in, there's somebody there and it's relentless. So I've had those terrible moments myself of kind of not being able to breathe and that panic. But I watched an Elizabeth Gilbert TED talk. She wrote a really brilliant book a couple of years ago called Big Magic. And this is about being in the presence of bad feelings. So we've lost all the things that normally pacify us. So we've lost, well, dry January, we can't, we don't have a drink. And actually that's a good thing, I think, but we've lost all that kind of being incredibly busy, being able to go somewhere, buy something, do something, learning to be in the presence of those feelings, giving yourself compassion, being kind to yourself about it, and doing that as a practice, and look at the experience and actually walking towards that terrible feeling and thinking, I'm going to just deal with this feeling because it's not going to kill me. It's it's here, but it's not going to kill me. So she's sort of suggesting curiosity is a better way of looking at things, and dropping the pressure to have a passion and a purpose and do everything that you want to do and bake that ridiculous banana bread or learn how to do the splits or whatever. But it's that kind of tense pressure we're used to putting on ourselves to distract us from awful feelings. Yes. And perhaps we don't need to do that. It's a TED talk, which is her being interviewed, which I found really useful. How are you dealing with it, Trish?
Well, actually, I'm not great at the moment. As you know, Lorraine, I've lost two friends in the last few months, and that has, I can't tell you, in the last month actually, it's been so unbelievably hard. And I think what's made it harder is not having my support network around me, not being able to you know, speak to friends. I mean, of course, you can speak on the phone. I think what's been, you know, one of the ways I've coped with it is actually picking up the phone and talking to people rather than just the constant sending texts. Because I feel like over that Christmas period, I didn't really see anybody apart from my immediate family. And obviously, I FaceTimed with my dad. But missing that support network in a time of kind of crisis, really, it's been incredibly hard. And while I haven't felt maybe as overwhelmed because, you know, my kids are older, I'm not having to homeschool, this experience, this kind of trying to deal with grief, which I haven't really had to deal with for probably since my mum died, you know, 16 years ago, it's been incredibly difficult. So I can only think about all those people out there suffering on their own and going through this process on their own. I can just really empathize yeah. with how incredibly the extra layer this situation is putting on top of that is just really,
I think, if you add loneliness into grief, it's very hard to deal with. There's a lot of people really dealing with loneliness, even within families that they're living with. The loneliness mm-hmm. is hard to deal with, isn't it? Have you done anything practically that you think has helped?
What I've done, well, I have to say, and I agree, I've never done dry January before. Doing dry January, that has been really, really good. It really is because I'm sleeping, I've got more energy, I'm clear-headed, and I think I've been able to, like you were saying, about sort of sit with those emotions. Like my response, you know, on hearing about my friend this week would have normally been, I'd go and get some wine, have a wine, you know, but actually, no, I just cried and cried and cried. And I just let it happen to me. And I, you know, because I didn't want to numb it. I wanted to actually experience it. I wanted to experience this, you know, losing a very, very loved and dear friend. And so that's been really helpful. And I've been doing some yin yoga, which is basically lying about. I just love it. It's very calm, where you get into a position and you just stay in that position for about 6 minutes. And there are lots and lots of YouTube videos. I'm doing that with my Virgin Gym. They've got a really good app, and that has been phenomenal. Actually, that's been really helpful. And I think something I haven't done, but I'd be quite interested in looking at, there's an awful lot of virtual retreats happening.
What does that mean?
Virtual retreats. It's like, so you might go to a retreat, doing it online, basically.
I wouldn't retreat anywhere.
You wouldn't retreat online. No. But, you know, actually, I'm going to give my friend a plug, another friend of mine. She does them. She lives in Tuscany. She's called Debbie Travis, and hers are Tuscan Get, you know, Debbie, TuscanGetaway.com, Instagram. Debbie Travis, and it's just lovely. It actually happened in the middle of January, but it's a 2-day event, and you can still download it, do all the workshops, do all the yoga, the nutrition, hear women talking together. It's a really, really lovely, and Debbie's energy and enthusiasm for life is really, really infectious. So I would definitely recommend that at TuscanGetaway.com.
And I think the overriding message is, we are not experts in mental health. So if you are in a very dark place, then you should see an expert in mental health and talk to someone. But the overriding message is we can cope.
Mm-hmm.
We will cope. We will all get through this. And everybody's circumstances are relevant, no matter how intense or not intense. It's all, you know, compassion for yourself is the thing you need to be showing, mm-hmm. isn't it? And there is light at the end of the tunnel and small happy moments in our day. And we're talking about these feelings of being overwhelmed, etc., because we've had some comments on our lovely Facebook group and on our Instagram. And Rachel had written, which I think, you know, sort of summed up part of this: one of the hardest things about lockdown for me is the fact that the house is never empty anymore. My house is just not mine anymore. I know this is a first world problem and there are much bigger things going on. And of course it's not my house, it's obviously our house. But it's also really annoying. I love my family dearly, but please reassure me that I'm not the only one. It adds to this sense of powerlessness, of losing control of our lives and the ability to shape our own day, to achieve what we want to get done and focus on our priorities. So carving out corners of physical and mental space just for us is really important right now. We may have to be a bit more creative, and I'm not throwing in the towel just yet.
So we hope that these ideas and thoughts and shared experiences will help you get through the days and weeks to come. And in fact, we had such a lovely post about the podcast, which really, really cheered me up this week, from Linda, who said, "I'm just back from a walk whilst listening to this podcast. Yet again, it made me feel so much better, more normal, but most importantly, more in control." Thank you, ladies. Well, thank you, Linda, great, for listening, and to all of you for listening. And obviously, your feedback is always so important to us. So do either review us, email us, join in on the group.
Cool.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
And now it's time to welcome this week's special guest, Gabby Logan. Gabby is a sports reporter, broadcaster, and presenter who began her career at Sky before moving to ITV and then the BBC in 2007. The 47-year-old has fronted coverage of the Olympics, the World Cup, Rugby Six Nations, the World Swimming Championships, and the Commonwealth Games. I'm exhausted just thinking about all of that. Blimey, so active. Her most recent project has been the launch of her own midlife podcast called The Midpoint, in which she talks to male and female celebrities and sports stars, many of whom are her personal friends, about finding their way through this stage of life and what they've learned about themselves so far. She is married to former Scotland rugby international Kenny Logan, and they live in Buckinghamshire with their 15-year-old twins, Lois and Reuben.
Welcome, Gabby, to Postcards from Midlife.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, we love your podcast. We're obviously big fans, as we are at our own midpoint in life too. What do you think it is about this life stage that makes it such a good time to take a moment and reassess who we are and what we've become?
For me, it was a kind of realization that I am getting older, definitely. I saw some visual kind of evidence of that one day in the mirror, and I had this moment where I thought, oh, well, inside, what do I feel? And does it matter what age I feel? Because I don't feel like I can do any less physically. I don't feel I've got any less ambition or things that I want to achieve and things I kind of want to tick off in life. I kind of started noticing more about the topic, more being written, more people talking about it. And suddenly, when you are aware of the fact that you're middle-aged, you start reading more about it. And then I thought, actually, it is important to understand what's going on physically, because I think it's almost as an important period as adolescence, which we know so much about. We talk about the physical changes of adolescence. We spend time, obviously, understanding it for ourselves, first of all, and then for our kids. And I think there's about, you know, probably about as much going on in that period as there is right now for us. So that kind of my motivation to get stuck into it a bit more was purely selfish.
Well, it is the same the same hormone changes and brain changes happen in perimenopause and menopause as in adolescence, so it's a quite similar point of life. But you are on TV all the time, so how you look and how you feel about how you look, when you say you notice some changes, how does that feel for you? Because it's much more of a pressure for you, isn't it, perhaps, than me and Trish, who are never on telly.
A shame. Yeah, I think you should be. Yeah, I think if you told me at 28 that at 47, in the year of my 48th birthday, I'd still be doing what I was doing then, I don't think I'd have believed you, because I thought I'd be off telly by the time I was 40, because I didn't really see many women over 40 on telly. But now there are so many more, and not only are they on telly, they're talking about their age. They're not bothered about it. It's not a thing. And it was a real thing, you know, for younger listeners. It's not kind of something that I've imagined. I had a boss who told me that one of my first television jobs, that I wouldn't do football on his channel after the age of 28. That was clearly his cutoff point. And I was 23. So for me, I was thinking I had about a 5-year career coming up, you know. And so I was in a bit of a rush at the beginning, probably because of that, thinking I had to kind of run through the whole thing as quickly as possible before this magic age of 28. But I think women now are embracing that part of their life and realizing that just because you turn a certain number, whether it's 40, 50 or 60, doesn't mean you have to change the way you dress dramatically. I mean, yes, we all want to modify things and our bodies change, but it's not about suddenly becoming beige, you know. And I think middle age used to be this kind of insult almost, didn't it, that you know,
looking younger. It's not about looking younger, is it?
Even exactly
for celebrities.
And so, you know, and do what you like, you know, if you want to go and have fillers or Botox, whatever. You could do what you like. You want to go off and make changes to your body in other ways, that's fine. But actually, for me, it's more about just still enjoying what I do and having joy in what you do. I think it is quite a youthful approach anyway, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And I know people in their 20s and 30s who seem a lot older than they are because they're kind of moaners. So,
we don't like moaners. That's what we don't like, do we, Trish? We like a positive, upbeat approach to life.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But I'm interested in this idea of you're 47, you're thinking about this time in your life. Has it kind of made you reassess anything specific? Are you talking to other people on the podcast about the midpoint?
It's reassured me in a way that how I felt about things is okay. And, you know, there's no right or wrong to it. When I turned 47, one of my best girlfriends rang me. We were in lockdown because it was in April. And she said, by the way, I read something this week and 47 is the age when you are at your most miserable.
Great.
And, that's the narrative, isn't it? That midlife is rubbish.
Exactly. And so I just thought, well, I don't feel miserable. I feel really positive. I feel really enthused about what I'm doing. And there's lots of things I still want to do. And I thought, well, am I supposed to start feeling miserable? And of course, there are serious mood changes that happen that can really affect people with regard to hormonal changes. And I didn't feel that was happening to me, but I also wanted to be aware if it was going to happen to me and, you know, how was I going to deal with that and what was I going to do? I just felt that 47 was in many ways no different to 37. And if anything, I felt a bit freer because I've got 15-year-olds and they're much more independent than my 5-year-olds were.
Do you find it easier to set boundaries though, or to say no to things? Because you could be busy all the time, couldn't you? You could be working all the time. That's one of the common themes we get from women in midlife, that they've started to say no or slow down or decide to take care of themselves more.
Yeah, but it's not so much saying no to work, because usually my diary's fairly kind of structured because of sport and things. It's actually pulling away from things at home sometimes to give myself space, and being amazed when I pull away, the void is created, somebody else pops in and does it, you know. So there's been a few times even the last couple of weeks where I'm working from home thinking both kids will be on their lunch hour in a minute. Okay, let's see what happens. You know, I don't have to get up and go and cook a meal. You know, let's
I've just seen what happens in the kitchen and it's really unpleasant, frankly.
They can start to get an idea of what it's like to run this house and do those things. And that is very liberating, actually.
And you've had some really great guests on The Midpoint, haven't you? Claudia Winkman, Denise Lewis. And you've also, you interview men, which we've only interviewed one man, haven't we?
Two, Trish.
That's it. Yes. So you've had Richard Osman, Michael Johnson, I think Piers Morgan is coming. So what's the difference between men at midlife and women at midlife? What's the attitude difference you've noticed through those interviews?
They talk more about the physical being related to their fitness. The kind of aesthetic, if you like, doesn't seem to be as high profile for them in terms of their list of things that they might talk about or be engaged by, except Piers. but they do talk about kind of wanting to stay fit, realizing that they're not the young men they were, and understanding their bodies are changing. But they obviously don't have that same hormonal kind of pressing kind of matter, do they? You know, their hormones do change, but absolutely, you know, compared to us, at a much slower rate, and not by their 51st birthday. Do you know what I mean? It's like they don't have that worry. Rio Ferdinand was interesting because he's 43 and he's just had a baby to his wife, obviously lost his first wife and has three older children. And we spoke to a doctor on that episode and she was talking about men's hormone changes. And it was like it never occurred to him that his hormones were going to change, you know, because I don't think men have that conversation really with each other or with themselves. So that was really interesting, seeing his kind of lack of thought. Well,
you realize if they don't think about it for them, how can they possibly understand
for their wives or their partners? That's also, I think, interesting. Some men have got a much greater awareness of that. They've either been through it with their wife and they appreciate that it can be quite challenging, or they just don't seem to notice, you know, that it's going on. I think it's so important men do have that conversation, because we work with them, we live with them. I suppose coming at it from my professional background, I obviously have worked in male dominated environments for most of my career. So I wanted men to be involved in the conversation.
There is a lot of talk and action, hopefully, about menopause becoming a topic in the workplace, you know, schools, in HR departments, schools, talking to our children about it, talking to our husbands about it. Is it a kind of conversation that you would have with Kenny and the children?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they kind of brought it up. Reuben and Lois, my teenagers, brought it up before I did, because they'd obviously done something at school. Mm-hmm. So any time in the last year that I've, you know, been slightly short-tempered, or, you know, they from where it used to be, is it your period? Now they go, is this menopause? And so I've had to kind of verbally slap them down on that a couple of times. No, I'm actually just really bloody angry with you for that. We have had conversations about it and they're really relaxed about it so much more. I don't think I would have had those kinds of conversations at 15 with my mum or, you know, any female relatives. I mean, it was called The Change, wasn't it?
Gloomy.
And some people had bad changes and other people had decent changes. And, you know, there's always an auntie that's got it worse than somebody else. And they're very chilled about it, actually, as kids are about so many topics now. The way they talk about sex and their own body changes and everything is kind of amazes me.
It's fascinating, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what has been your menopause journey so far?
I don't know if you've had a guest on yet who's mentioned this. I didn't realise I had IVF. I didn't realise that IVF can bring on menopause earlier. And so I had my bloods tested because I thought, maybe you should see where I am. And this was in the summer. And basically, I'm pretty much at the end of it. And I'm kind of like, yeah, I'm kind of almost at the point where I'm not going to have another period. I might have one more.
Right. Interesting.
And yeah, and so I didn't even know because I didn't have very bad symptoms. And so I suppose I was kind of thinking my periods were a bit erratic, but I wasn't quite on it. I think when you've had those issues in your life, I didn't know I was going to not be able to have a baby without IVF until we started trying because I didn't have any gynecological issues as such. Mm-hmm. And I had that inexplained infertility that 20% of people have. So my periods have always been really regular. And then when they started slowing down, I just thought it was just life, you know, and you kind of don't really pay much attention to it. And that's kind of where I am. I definitely got a bit more anxious and a bit more maudlin, I think. But then we were going through a global pandemic as well last year. So, so what was my anxiety related to? Mm-hmm. But I think once you kind of know, once I heard that, the doctor rang me up and she said, "Are you okay about this?" And I was like, "Yes, I've never had a big attachment to my period." You know, so
some women do, though, don't they? Yeah. Then the last one is quite important.
I think it's weird when you've got a teenage daughter as well, though. There's this balancing act going on in the house all the time, I think.
Now, fitness is really important to you, isn't it? You were a gymnast. We were just talking in your introduction about the fact that you look so fit and fabulous. Your toned arms get commented upon. I think fitness and success are very linked, aren't they? And our society tends to see fit people as more successful. Working in sport, being a former gymnast, I mean, how is that working for you in your own thoughts about your fitness at this point in life?
Do you know, it's funny, just this week, actually, that you asked that question, because I got an Apple Watch for Christmas and I've suddenly started becoming a bit more obsessed by metrics on my wrist. And one of the things I was amazed at is how few calories I was burning with these mega workouts I was doing. I was like, this can't be right. You know,
I've just
killed myself for like 45 minutes and I haven't even burnt off a digestive biscuit. What's going on? Fitness ordinarily for me is just really important for life and health. But actually what that is indicative of, I think, is it's so much harder for you to retain, to make changes, to get fitter. You know, as you get older, that is so much more apparent that muscle is harder to build, you know, it's harder to kind of come. If you have a few weeks off, it's harder to get back to where you were. You know, when I was younger, you'd have a big week, a big blowout, go on holiday or something, you come back within a day, you're kind of like, you know, you're feeling you've
it's
done a couple
unfair.
Of work. I know, it's just,
I will never win an Olympic medal now. I've realized that. Annoying.
It's a blow for us all so therefore you have to shift your mindset and your goals, don't you? And that's happening slowly to me. I'm releasing that memory of the physical person I once was and saying, right, okay, just being fit for life is so important. Skin changes, everything changes, doesn't it, on your body. So
it's picking other sports that have got longevity to them that you could perhaps still be doing in your sort of 70s and possibly 80s.
Even tennis, things like, you know, I love it when I see old people. I'm talking
teenagers say old
people. You know, people in their 70s playing tennis. In fact, the other day I was listening to a tribute to a footballer who died on the radio. He was 72, and another footballer said, "I mean, it's no age. He's just so young." And I thought, "Yeah, he's young at 72."
Can you still do the splits, Gabby?
Yes. Lorraine, that will still be happening when I'm 60, 72. Actually, as long as you keep doing it, I can't lose that. Surely, I'm not. No. I'm hoping anyway. That's one thing I'm hanging on to. Yeah.
Well, I'm very proud of you for doing it.
So could you just maybe take us through what's a kind of week in your fitness life?
Do you know what I've got better at doing is actually listening to myself. So if I've done kind of like some really hard weights and workout, and then do you know what? This week I feel like doing a lot of yoga or I feel like running. Mm-hmm. So I think when I was younger, I would have a trainer and I would be on this kind of, this is what we're doing. I think probably in the last year, since I haven't had anybody telling me what to do, I kind of go, actually, I don't feel like doing that today. I'm going to do this. I'm going then I'm going to do a bike ride. So as long as I'm, and when I say active, I don't mean just going for a walk, but doing something more like kind
sweating
of exercises.
Somehow.
Yeah, raising my heart rate properly.
Does Kenny do it with you?
Not with me. He would say this if he was here. The last time I did a session with him, that he just followed me around afterwards. He was like, "You're so fit." And he's like, and he was like,
"What did you think you were doing in the gym all that time then?"
So he's much more likely to do a bike session, or he doesn't like my kind of weights hit sessions. He's very relaxed with himself like that, though. He's like, I've done it. I played for my country 70 times. I don't need to prove myself to anybody now, you know. So, yeah. Which is again probably a male thing, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? It's like, I'm fine with not being the kind of physical specimen I was. He wants to keep his weight down because of health, you know, and he likes to be fit, but he's not bothered about racing around and pushing himself higher and higher and doing the weights harder and harder or anything. He'd rather be outside for hours and hours mending and fixing and being physical outside. We have got really into our long walks. And
I've been watching them. You're very good on Instagram. You do a little chat. Sometimes Kenny is listening to you. Sometimes he's not.
No. Sometimes he's up for it. Other times he's not. The walking has been really good for him, I think, mentally, because he gets a podcast on or something and he goes and out with the dogs for hours. And I think it's been, for a lot of people, hasn't it? It's been a real escape to do that.
How has lockdown been for the family? Because teenagers trapped in a house, it's, you know, it's really hard for them.
It is. I feel really sorry for them. You know, their social lives obviously are, well, all of ours are non-existent, but we've had lots of social life, so we've got memories. Yeah. You know? But they don't get enthused about the idea that we're going to have a Mexican night tonight, kids. No. Let's see if we can dress up. They're not having the normal stimulus they should at their age, are they? And that is tough, and we can't do anything about that. We can't replicate it.
No.
Ruben's more likely to, you know, the whole exercising outside with one person. One of his friends will come up on a bike and they'll go out on a bike ride. I'm trying to make them ring their grandparents almost every day. Yeah. And it's quite nice when you hear that interaction, because obviously they're at two ends of the spectrum, aren't they, in terms of how they're dealing with all of this. I hope that it will, in the long run, be a thing that they'll get more resilience from, not that they need it, but they will have rigor and they'll understand they've come through something historic and they'll appreciate the lessons learned.
I mean, parenting twins, we've both done it, but boy-girl twins, mine are probably about a year older than yours. I mean, it's
a great human experiment, I call it.
It is. It's quite a unique experience, isn't it? Watching these two, they, you know, how they hit the milestones.
Yeah.
Normally you've got the older child compared to the younger child and they lead the way. How's that experience been for you, do you think?
I've loved it. And just last night, actually, they were on really good form and they'd both been funny and kind to each other. And, you know, they're actually getting of age now where they are really lovely to each other, and they've gone out the room and I said to Kenny, we should have had another set a year later. They are a great kind of joy and they're great for each other. I think having them at home together in lockdown has been really lovely because they've gone to separate schools for the last few years, so they've got close again, you know.
Now you've had a really long and successful career in sports reporting, broadcasting. I mean, it's been really brilliant, actually, to have a woman with such longevity as a female presenter. And you've had to be quite confrontational, I think, sometimes in your interviews. You've had to have that inner steadiness and steel around things. Have you always been comfortable with that as a woman? Because I know a lot of women find that difficult.
Yeah, sometimes I come away from a situation and you might see a reaction on social media and you think, would you have said that if a man had conducted that interview?
Exactly.
You know, is it just because you're hearing tough things coming out of a woman's mouth or putting somebody kind of under a bit of pressure? You know yourself, I think you're your worst critic and your best judge in terms of, was that fair? Did I do that the best way I could? And of course, we've all made mistakes and you come away sometimes thinking, maybe I should have done this or that. But generally, when you've had to push somebody a little bit, you hope you do it, you know, for the right reasons, and you're trying to get some straight answers. And then when you read kind of criticism from people, you think, I'm not sure that you would have said that to a man. I think it's changing. At Newsnight, it's pretty much exclusively presented by women now, isn't it? And they're all excellent interviewers in their own style. Not everybody has a combative style. And I think also when you have been in a career for a while, then people know what to expect, don't they?
Yeah.
It's interesting. I think sometimes you hear things from male colleagues, not necessarily broadcasters, but people kind of, you working around and they go, oh, are you going to be angry with me today then, or something like that? And you think,
men don't like angry women, do they? Well, they don't like women showing strong emotions. Yeah. It's, they say angry, they don't mean angry, they just mean like they would be.
But I'm just really grateful that the man I chose to spend my life with doesn't see it that way at all. He'd never turn around and patronise me. He'd never say that. I don't think it would ever enter his brain, you know what I mean, that I shouldn't be as combative as him or as passionate about something or angry whatever way you want to describe it, run.
You don't think you changed your personality around it? Because often I found when I worked in big newsrooms of men, you'd be in a news conference and there'd be three women and 15, 20 men, that sometimes I would change my personality to adapt a bit. And then I'd think, actually, why am I shouldn't be doing this. I should just be who I am. But it would be easier to not be that.
Sometimes we do that for women as well, don't we? You
know, yeah.
Certain situations, I think. And there's certain men I work with where actually, if I want to get something that, you know, if I want to achieve something out of that conversation or that
easier
that
way, dialogue,
there's a better way of doing it. So mm-hmm.
What's the next step for you then? What's the thing you want to do most next?
At the moment, I'm enjoying doing what I do. And it's hard to imagine a life without sport completely. But there will come a point in the next decade where I don't want to be doing matches all the time, and I want to do something else, maybe a bit more daily or a bit more of a routine. You know, life is so random. Mind you, I've managed to have the randomness through 15 years of kids, so I suppose
you made that work.
So I do want to do more outside, and I've been writing a memoir, which memoir sounds a bit pretentious, but I didn't want to write a biography as such.
Did you keep a diary, or have you had to re-remember all of this?
Well, my husband will tell you, I don't know whether it's because I did a law degree, but I have got a really good memory. So I did look through a few notebooks, but all I have to do is think about kind of that week, something in that week, and I get into it really quickly, and I can remember everything. And which annoys him, because obviously if we were in an argument or a disagreement and I go, no, it was definitely the
you clearly haven't had the menopausal brain fog.
No,
you definitely escaped that.
Oh, I do feel that sometimes when I'm at work and I can't recall a stat as quickly, and I think, is this it? Just actually, as I said to my granny, who's 92, who's got dementia, I said to her, you've just got too many memories, and some of them won't fall out, so you can't, that's why you can't remember things. And so I forgive myself on that and go, no, you've just got too many stats in there, you need to leak some stats out of the brain.
Do you have a favorite sport to commentate on or to watch?
I'm going
to
be a bit on the fencey here, because I do feel so lucky that when I do the rugby, it's the Six Nations, which is one of the best tournaments in the world. When I do football, it's either Premier League or World Cup. At the moment, nothing feels that important without crowds, because crowds make it feel important. When I do the athletics, I'm doing the Olympics and I'm doing World Championships. So at each of those different occasions, you feel like you're at the peak of those sports. Mm-hmm. So it's a joy to do. And actually, the variety is lovely, because it keeps you kind of interested and focused, and you never get too sucked into any one bubble.
Part of that world.
Yeah. And then you also have different perspective. It's interesting moving from one to the other and seeing how they all operate in different ways and how people are in those different sports.
It's going to be quite hard, isn't it, for all the young people who have lost all their sporting chances the last couple of years now, to kind of, and all the kind of ground root sport that's kind of disappeared, all the local clubs that can't exist anymore. How are we going to rebuild all of that for everybody?
I think the grassroots sport, I hope, will come back quickly, because a lot of that is based on volunteers anyway, who just love it. I think the worry for them is that they'll lose these kids, because they're at a pivotal age, 15, 16, where
girls drop out of sport at 13 just the big time for them to stop. It's such a dropout now and never come back, isn't
and that's
it?
That's the worry for female. There's loads of other worries for women's sport for me. Women's sport was going so well in 2019, and the sponsorship was coming in and the changes were being made, and of course we've seen the thing that's been hit hardest in sport is women's professional sport, because they don't have that backup, that reservoir of funds and sponsors. And so that's really sad that progress seems to have stalled and stumbled. But hopefully what it's highlighted to people is that it still needs loads of work. There's a kind of veneer as a success in terms of England's women football. Obviously went to the semi-finals of the World Cup, but there's a lot underneath that needs a lot more work. So I think what we've also realised, though, don't forget, is how important sport has been in terms of our own mental health in this time. I think that's really been a conversation that has come to the fore, and people have walking, running, doing things, because they've also realised that if you're fit, you're less likely, for example, to have long-term repercussions from COVID. Not entirely, but it has been a factor. So hopefully that will encourage people to stay active and stay involved in sport and find a sport that they enjoy. It'd be travesty for young people to kind of not find their way back to sport and to lose.
I know,
we will lose some kids.
Gabby, do you want to just tell us, we know you've got Piers Morgan coming on the midpoint, any other great guests? you'd I've like
got,
to.
It's a very diverse group. We've got Davina coming on. And then I did a podcast with Richard Bacon a couple of weeks ago, which I think I might put in third because he was fascinating because he's had so many things happen to him in the midlife, you know. Kind of
his journey's been extraordinary, hasn't it?
Yeah, very ill. And obviously he's now living in LA and he's changed his career slightly in terms of what he's doing. And then Tess Daly was on. She's going to be in the mix, Rio Ferdinand. So yeah, it's quite a nice little series that's kind of coming together. It's been a joy to do, actually.
So here we are at the point in the show we like to call How to Win at Midlife. Now, if you've been getting your knickers in a twist or your tangas in a tangle, did you write this script, Trish?
Yes,
tangas in a tangle. Because you can't find underwear that fits well, feels amazing, and does the scaffolding work required, you will be interested in what we've got to tell you next. Trish, you have talked to an underwear expert, haven't you?
I have indeed. The lovely Sarah Connolly is a lingerie fitter and stylist. She's based in Edinburgh and does both in-person, obviously not at the moment, and virtual appointments. And her mission is to add elegance, sass, and a sweet kick in the pants to how women think about, shop for, and feel in their lingerie. We like the sound of that, don't we?
Does your lingerie match?
Sometimes. If I'm making an effort.
I think it's important. It does, you know.
Oh, well, let's see. Sarah's got some thoughts on that. Shall we see what she's got to say? She's been in the business for 15 years, and she says that some of the most common problems that she sees with her clients are that they get really confused about inconsistent sizing because your bra size in one brand may not be the same for another. The size can vary wildly, really, depending on the designer's perceived fit of the individual garment. So that's something quite tricky. If you think, oh, I'm a 34D or whatever, you probably
are not.
Of course I'm not. And wasting money on lingerie that looks okay in the shop, but then you get it home and it's so blooming itchy and uncomfortable and rides up your bottom and all that sort of thing. And then there's that kind of disappointment if the delicate sort of sexy, beautiful lingerie that you're looking for just doesn't come in your size, because obviously there's such a breadth of sizes and some brands just don't do as many as you'd like. And also when you're actually, you know, I don't know how you find this, but really, it's the worst thing, isn't it, trying on lingerie? And then you're like, oh, you don't want to sort of running back and forth to the fitting room trying to find something that fits, and you're getting a right old panic.
Like,
and you're, oh God, yeah, no, it's quite hard, isn't it? And then, of course, there's the issue of confidence, especially at times when our bodies might be going through some changes. So, like after we've had babies, during menopause, obviously.
Well, your sizes change during menopause
don't
they?
Exactly.
The
and we could just sort of sometimes you just think, oh God, it's just, I'll just stick to the same old sports bra that kind of just hoiks everything in, or you know, because you're just nervous, you can't face the idea of trying to find a replacement.
You're presenting a very depressing underwear scenario here.
Well, Fish. I think again it's just these, a lot of the thing, again, mention the old Facebook group, a lot of this has come up on the Facebook group, so I thought it was probably worth Sarah telling us what the kind of there are challenges, right? So what do we do? So we have to think about fit first of all. Obviously, if you can go to an expert or do a virtual online appointment with an expert, the first time you do it, you will probably never look back, because fitting and measuring are apparently two separate concepts. So a measuring tape will give you a sort of ballpark size, but every bra fits entirely different depending on how it's sort of the technicality of the structuring of it, etc. So even if the labels display the same size, they probably won't be. So when
that's the fit, not the measurement you're looking
for. That's the fit, not that you're looking for the fit, not the measurement. And when she works with a client, she says she looks at all the tiny nuances of the body to recommend the sort of shapes and styles that fit you best. But the general fitting rules are that the band underneath should be firm fitting and the underwire should be completely flat against your body all the way around the cuff.
I'm feeling my bra now.
It's wrong, right? You need a fitting. Okay. But if you get the right fit, that is when it's going to be flattering and you'll feel, you know, your confidence will be boosted in that. So, you know, it's not just as simple as picking between padded or non-padded or a balconette.
It's the fit.
Or a full cut. It is, you know, and those sort of little details can really have an incredible effect on the support and accentuate everything in the most gorgeous way. I think it's about how you feel. First of all, it has to look and fit good, but it's also about how you feel in it. And, you know, that mix of comfort, confidence, style, or sex appeal, if that's what you're looking for, is different for every woman. So you might fit a slinky lace bra beautifully, but if you're kind of anxious that you might pop out at any moment, No. You're not going to feel confident in it. So you've really got to, you know, get the sort of the sense, the feel, and be comfortable in your bra. How are you about popping out?
Well, I'm a small lady, fresh, not of voluptuous proportions, no. More of a kind of sporting, I would say, yes. More sporting
yes.
Proportions.
It'd be nice
I
to think have something to fall out, wouldn't it?
I don't ever wear non-underwired stuff unless I'm exercising because I've never been measured properly. Mm. I've never had time. And I think I would be better suited to non-underwired, perhaps.
Yeah.
And also, I think it's really important that you learn how to do it properly so that when you take your daughters, your teenage yes. daughters, they are wearing the right thing from the start and they're not crippled by uncomfortable underwear. And I think you have to sort of think about it for all areas of your life. What are you going to be doing in that bra? I can't tell you. It takes me an hour to get into a sports bra. I've done so much exercise by the time I've got the bloody thing on.
Yes.
So just because I haven't found one that I can just put on and take.
Yeah.
I don't think, it feels like these things are designed by men sometimes, yeah. Even though somebody who's never worn one. But you do need to get it right so that you get your daughters get it right. Because we took yeah. our daughters to M&S. It was the wrong thing to
do. Mm-hmm.
We went to Victoria's Secret against all my better judgment. And that was just a team of really young women who mm-hmm. knew exactly what young girls wanted to wear and how to shape them and fit them and how to, you know, to go back in every 3 months to make sure that you were measuring them
yeah.
as they grow. I think it's a really specific thing. And I do think it's important because I think it is, as you say, about confidence and what you're yeah. wearing and how it feels all day.
Well, Sarah was saying that kind of her route into lingerie fitting was a bit of a strange one because her first experience of bra fitting in a high street store left her completely devastated because her mum had measured her and she'd got her, you know, classic 34A bra and she decided to go for a fitting when she was sort of in her late teens, I think early 20s. And the woman said there really wasn't any size there and there wasn't much to measure. Can you imagine? I mean, the poor girl, she was absolutely devastated. And sort of by some sort of strange coincidence, a few years later, she got a job in a lingerie store and she was fitted by the manager who actually measured her at a 30D. So the difference between a 34A yeah. and a 30D, that is quite phenomenal. And she said it just changed everything for her because it made her feel more confident and it transformed how her boobs looked in clothes and it's just sort of no looking back. So that's kind of interesting, isn't it? And that's why I think getting our yeah. daughters fitted, although they're quite shy, isn't he quite shy? I don't think she'd feel comfortable being fitted. So I'm going to have to work on that one. But have you ever given your undie drawer a detox? I think that's something
I'm going to do it. That's
I think it's
my
a 2021
task.
Yeah,
because I think you get into a rut.
Yeah.
Because your breasts change shape after you have babies, don't they? As you get older and the hormones are in and out mm-hmm. and just at various stages in your life. So I think you should probably do it quite regularly. But yeah. I think you just need to look at the underwear drawer and say, is it working?
Does it bring me joy? Yeah. I mean,
does it bring me any joy?
Throw out anything worn out, just throw it out. Anything that makes you feel less than fabulous, then just don't hold on to it.
Does that include family members?
Okay. I could give that a go.
There's a lot of them that make me feel less than.
So Sarah obviously recommends trying on the pieces you like, but be really honest yourself. And if it doesn't fit, don't keep it. There are so many charities that you can donate good quality items to. Like there's one called smallsforall.org, which is a small Scottish charity that supplies kind of good secondhand underwear to like actually to women and girls in the UK, as well as in Africa, who just simply can't afford to buy it for themselves.
There's another one called againstbreastcancer.org, and you can just post your bras off, which is very helpful to them. Or you can make a bra bank where you collect everyone's bras and then they'll come and collect it.
Yeah.
I think the other thing to mention here is, and this has only happened in the last 2 or 3 years, I think, is the massive lack of choice for women, black women or brown women, when it comes to colours for bras. Because there's a lot of colours that just don't suit certain skin tones, and it was a very narrow range, whereas there's some brands now like Nubian Skin, Savage Fenty ones, which have really great bras. If you're looking particularly, I think, for your daughters, if you're a black mum and you want your black daughters to wear really great stuff that suits their skin tone, because as we say, it affects how you feel. It can affect how you feel. So it's really important that you get it right. There's some new brands as well, Trish. Are you ready to talk brands?
Yes, let's talk brands. What are your favourite or what's caught your eye recently?
Well, the sale is on at the outlet. If you want a designer one, I'm telling you, half price, rather good. Fig Leaves is good, I think. Intimacy has a massive, massive range. Eres, E-R-E-S, has a great range. I like the Stella McCartney ones because they're really good for small women with not the most voluptuous of shapes. Bodas, B-O-D-S, is good, I think. And then there's a lovely one I found online called Dora Larson. They're just really light and cool looking ones, which I think would suit people as well. And I think there's one called Commander, which I quite liked. What have you seen?
Well, Sarah, I'll just tell you Sarah's, because she's a lifelong fan of Simone Perrell, P-E-R-E-L-E, and Fleur of England, because she sort of says that they really nailed modern femininity and they're just technically very,
they're very,
very
flowery. Fleur of England are very
and
nice.
And she likes Dita Von Teese's collection, which I have to say I haven't looked at, so I'm going to have a look at that. And then her, some of her more recent discoveries include Adina Ray, R-E-A-Y, and Taryn Winters, which are independent brands as well. And I've spotted a few on Instagram as well that seem to pop up on the ads on Instagram, which I really like the look of, like organic basics, which is sort of very sustainable and ethical. And one called Russell England, which have really lovely silky bras. So if I was going to splash out, I might have a look at those.
Want me to get you one?
Instead
48
of
48 DDD.
48 DDD, lovely. But do have a look at Sarah's website, www.sarahconnelly.co.uk, and that's Connelly, C-O-N-N-E-L-L-Y, where you can find much more detailed guides on her lingerie drawer recommendations. You can follow her on Instagram at sarahc_lingerie. And most exciting of all, Sarah is offering a virtual bra fitting as a competition prize on the Facebook group. So please do pop on there and have a look.
Not live on Facebook.
Not live, unless you want to.
Privately.
Hey, we could have a live. We could do a live.
No, Trish, we couldn't. It would be terrible. No one would want to see that.
No, we won't. Though. We won't make anybody do that live.
I'll put that in my sitcom for women in their 50s, live bra fittings. So thank you very much for that advice, Sarah. I think that's really useful. I think a virtual bra fitting should be on your list of things to do in February. So we hope that 2021 will be your year of perfect pants and beautiful bras. Well, I'm all excited as usual because this is my favourite bit of the show. Oh. We are at our nostalgia noodle. Can I drum roll?
What's yours this week then, Lorraine?
Fanny Craddock. Oh. I have been down a Fanny wormhole, as it were. This is after watching Gogglebox, obviously, and seeing Fanny Craddock's Christmas on Gogglebox. I mean, I had to rewind and watch it again. Because obviously I don't cook, but she was part of my childhood, a bit of Fanny Craddock. Just before Delia, I guess, Fanny.
Have I left quite someone a lot in the before Delia, but yes, I think so, yeah.
Anyway, I'm mentioning it. She has a new book. She doesn't, obviously, she's not here, God bless her, anymore. But there is a new book, Keep Calm and Fanny On. Could be your motto, Trish, given that you had your video turned off for the first half of this by accident. Keep Calm and Fanny On. So she wasn't only a cook, she was also a poet. Do you know what her real name was?
No, I did not. I don't. What?
Phyllis.
Phyllis? Phyllis
Which Craddock? You literally could have guessed.
Oh.
So she was in the 70s. I mean, the thing that perplexes me and fascinates me, just really fascinates me, is Fanny's eyebrows, or lack of
eyebrows. Where were the eyebrows? I know, it's a strange...
Well, it's a bit of a nostalgia noodle in itself, isn't it? Because in those sort of late 80s, early 90s, in around that time, nobody had eyebrows. Everyone felt that a thin pencil eyebrow...
Thin.
We've all been trying to grow them back, haven't we? Back into our giant fluffy ones, and mine have not quite made it. But she used to wear these extraordinary bows on her head as well. And she had this collection of enormous handbags that she would take everywhere.
Goodness,
and wear she took one on Parkinson and kept getting things out of it.
Getting things out of it. She's quite rude. She's quite feisty, old Fanny, wasn't she?
Have liked Fanny? I'm not sure she's on my dinner party list of favourite guests.
No, I'd be terrified.
Horrible. I mean, I liked her being a difficult woman on telly because that must have been very annoying for all the men around those times. But the double entendre of any kind of Fanny Craddock cookery show. Yesterday, I watched her because I had a moment spare. What did she say? Stuff this inside the skin of this raw, dry old bird. That could be how I'm described on my gravestone.
Oh, but doesn't that sound tempting and delicious?
She did it with the power of a heavyweight boxer.
Again, a lot of fists. She's sort of, oh, I was going to say
don't
fisting.
Say fisting.
She was fisting. She was fisting that Christmas cake mix on the Gogglebox clip.
I seem to sometimes wonder, Trish, whether I lead you into a joke or whether you find it yourself. Anyway, fanny fisting aside, do you have something nicer for me?
I think it's slightly nicer. Mine was triggered by a trip to Wimbledon Common early this morning with the dog, with lovely Brandy. And this lovely other Labrador decided to take a sort of amorous mounting kind of interest in poor old Brandy. And I just heard this man shrieking, "Humphrey, Humphrey." I was like, that's not a name you hear very often these days. Anyway, Humphrey humped off, thankfully, left poor Bridie alone. And it made me think, I don't know how it went.
Where are you going? Anyway. Be careful, where are we going? Very careful.
Watch out, there's a Humphrey about.
Oh! It was a TV advert about the milk, wasn't
about
it?
About milk. It was Unigate milk, and it was these red and white straws. I don't remember this, but I found it on YouTube. Muhammad Ali did one. And you just see this big sort of long straw coming into the background because you had to drink your milk before the Humphrey straw got it. And do you remember we used to have to get desperate for the straws from the milkman and stickers and all sorts of things.
This is when you had free school milk at school as well.
Possibly as well. They were very keen on the old everybody drinking milk. But of course, nowadays it's all almond milk and oat milk that the youngsters like drinking.
Oh, Humphrey wouldn't like that.
Humphrey wouldn't like that.
It became part of life, didn't it? Family life. Like when you have a Dubrumi flip, using that word for the TV remote, my dad would, I'd say, "Where's this?" And he'd go, "Well, there's a Humphrey about."
Oh, yeah. So sweet. And if you were drinking milk, all the milk had gone. Oh, I see Humphrey has been about. Exactly.
All the milk was gone. Oh, I like Humphrey. I remember it fondly.
I think that's a bit more pleasant than the fanny.
Well, it started
fanny situation.
Really, Trish.
Bit of dogging.
Okay, thank you.
Right, enough.
And good night. Well, that Benny Hill version of Nostalgia Noodling has brought us to the end of episodes of Postcards from Midlife. I'm sorry if we upset anyone with that. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed it, can I please ask that you review us on iTunes or Acast or wherever you subscribe for your podcast, because that's so helpful for us. So just pop down some stars.
5 stars.
Okay. So pop down 5 stars. 5's the subliminal message for you all there. If you could, please, that would be really wonderful. We'd be very grateful. And then we can read out some of your reviews on the podcast next time.
And don't forget to join us on our Facebook group, where you can win that brilliant virtual bra fitting prize. Also Instagram or email us hello@postcardsfrommidlife.com. Goodbye.
Bye.